Hello, and welcome to Lush Learning. My name's Andrew Payne, and today I'll be talking to Richard Youngs and Cyprian Renema about collaboration. Richard is a musician, classically trained in piano and guitar, but musically, he says, he grew up in the shadow cast by punk rock. Adopting guerrilla recording techniques, the independent DIY ethic is at his core. He has been called the iconic figure of the UK modern, UK underground. Cyprian Renema, born in the Netherlands, is a Glasgow-based artist, writer and musician. He has performed with David Allen, Trembling Bells and Marshall Allen of the Sun Ra Orchestra. His recent artwork scrutinises the legacies of romantic wanderers, addicts and poets. I began by asking Cyprian if he could define collaboration.
Well, I think maybe the best way to describe collaborating is by an analogy with the ancient and undersung art of Sicilian overton singing, which is distinct and distinctly different from other styles of overton singing, in that four trained singers, which are often monks, will sing together in close harmony so that a virtual fifth voice appears as a result of different frequencies overlapping. So four people create an extra voice which is extraneous and can't be brought back to any one of them, but only exists because they work together.
Richard?
I think Cyprian's going about this the right way. Rather than looking at a definition, we should maybe look at specific instances and say, is that a collaboration? Is it bringing, you know, this added element through people coming together?
Okay.
That maybe is a more useful way of looking at collaboration rather than going straight in trying to define it.
What would another example?
Another example would be, let's just go and say, the Beatles. It's a collaboration. I'm taking the most, you know, widespread, potentially best-known collaboration. Why was that a collaboration? Well, you had different personalities coming together. Aside from McCartney too, I think you could argue that all of them did their best work while in the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
Except McCartney too.
You might go back to McCartney.
Yeah. That was a slightly facetious remark. but I think you would look at that, and it's that, you know, something being more than the sum of the parts. Now, there are other instances where people are together. You know, you could look at maybe the late work of the Eagles and say, well, that wasn't really a good example of a collaboration. Yeah, you had these guys in a studio, but they weren't getting on. They weren't producing the goods, you know. Yeah, it was a collaboration in one sense, but it wasn't a particularly successful one. They'd possibly, even in retrospect, look back and say, it just wasn't cutting it.
So based on what you're saying about the Beatles and the Eagles then, do you think that for it to be good collaboration, then there's a requirement of something like love or respect for each other?
No, not necessarily. You could have a collaboration where people are absolutely at each other's throats, and yet it still is more than the sum of its parts. Maybe we're getting at it, you know, the notion of that extra element being created, and it is not just the logical conclusion of bringing individuals together. It is something magical. It is something unexpected. It's something that surprises each person involved. I never thought we'd come up with that.
So when does that work best for you, or when has that worked best for you? Can you think of an example where you've been surprised?
Yeah, and I think that often goes with any outside influence. If you're open to it, you've got to be open to it, and the outside influence has got to be a certain nature, but it can often lead to being surprised. I think it's the element of surprise which is maybe what you would hope to get out of a collaboration.
Well,
I think that another important criterion for me when I'm collaborating is that it has to be something that I could never have done under my own steam.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you can collaborate with somebody on your own terms, but effectively it's more like outsourcing. You know, if I want to have something done that is complicated, then maybe I can just ask other people to help me, but because I'm directing it and I'm governing it, they are effectively working for me. So to continue with the analogy, they would be like studio musicians.
Exactly.
And I would be, I don't know, I would be, say, you know, some the Eagles.
Yes.
But it gets more interesting when the result is something that could never have been achieved without there being somebody else. So I always feel that the result of a healthy collaboration is sort of this virtual element that exists outside of me. On Friday, I have an exhibition opening in Basel in Switzerland about carnival in Basel, which apparently is very different from other carnivals along the Rhine. And I have very little knowledge of carnivals and very little interest in them. But my friend, who is a curator, asked me if I wanted to do something for it, which I thought was quite a challenge, given that I would never voluntarily go to a carnival as it is celebrated in that context, because it's just a lot of drinking and crude sex jokes, and I can do that anywhere. But that got even better when I asked my friend to be involved, and she is a well-known Swiss-German playwright with a background in social engagement, and often people consider her to be a feminist, but she doesn't enjoy the label because she feels it pins her down. But for argument's sake, let's say she is, because the project we're doing is about the prejudices towards prostitution during carnival in Basel,
okay,
which is the sort of specific and obscure subject that I would never have arrived at on my own. And also the form is different from anything I would normally do, because we try to engage the prostitutes and create a collaboration with people that were left out of the carnival and the documentary festival completely. So we were trying to create a carnival of prostitutes somehow. We got turned down by all the prostitutes because we said we have a budget, we can just give you the budget, you know, you don't have to work on the street, you can go do something else. But somehow they didn't feel they wanted to do this. Maybe they felt it was exploitative or whatever, but that's fair. So now our project is basically about a failed collaboration with prostitutes, but the project itself is a collaboration. So the result, even though it is formally a failure, is something that is so different from anything I would have endeavoured on my own that I'm quite curious to see what it will be.
Yeah, Richard?
I was going to say, I think that brings up another element that it isn't just the people, it's the circumstances that the people are in that often adds that, or yet another dimension. So, you know, that's a perfect illustration there. But, you know, getting back to, say, well, let's get back to the Beatles, hey?
Right. Yeah, yeah.
The Beatles, they really quite by chance ended up recording, you know, with George Martin, who had certain equipment at his disposal. And they were in a particular period of history where there was this equipment, and that shaped a lot of what they did. And similarly, say a live performance, you're at the mercy of the PA, the audience, maybe the weather outside, whether or not a lot of people come to see you,
yeah,
and that affects your performance. And it, you know, it's all a dynamic. And I don't think you can treat anything, even if you did something without other people, everything is related to where and when you're doing it.
So it's the environment and the people.
Mm-hmm. I also think it is about making sure that you keep being surprised by the other people. I think if we're just going to go back to the Beatles, just for argument's sake, because everybody knows it, you know, they get annoying and they get dreary at the point where they start not getting excited by each other. I think it's a good thing that they captured at Abbey Road, because afterwards you can just tell when you listen to John Lennon's first solo stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He just wanted to go and do the blues in his own way. And McCartney, I think, kept the Beatles aesthetic for a bit longer, or at least recognizably. And George Harrison had such a wealth of things that he came out with a triple album straight away. But it feels like they didn't entertain each other with it anymore. They didn't surprise each other. And I think an important thing is that you are actively filled with a sense of wonder about what's going to come next. And at the point when the wonder goes away, it's better to just go your own ways again.
To go away.
I mean, I totally agree. I think that's the case with anything that you could call a success, is where you're surprised with it, you know. And we'll almost go further. Was I deeply puzzled by it? Would it be the sign of supreme success?
But does it have to be a success to feel wonderful? Can't it be a magnificent failure, but still an element of one.
Well, the magnificence would be the successful element of it. Nothing's maybe that clear-cut, success or failure. You know, that's possibly oversimplifying it.
I think a magnificent failure is often the biggest success.
Mm.
Just think of Captain Scott and the South Pole.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows Captain Scott, and everybody else forgot who got there first.
Yes.
And what feels like failure today can feel like success tomorrow, and then it comes back to feeling like failure. You know, your feelings can fluctuate about something, and that would go to the... That would be a situation in which you're really not quite sure what to think. You're bewildered by it. And that is a very exciting feeling, I think.
Okay. You two, in particular, you're used to collaboration, and I get a sense that both of you will go in with a sense of just letting go and let's just see what happens without any sort of... not worrying too much about the outcome. You're just up for an outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you see the fear or the threat of collaboration coming from? Why do some people find it so difficult to come together and do that?
People are too obsessed with the success of the collaboration. And of course, I can only speak for myself, but I think in my case, what I have my own sort of indivisible, united and coherent practice as an artist and a musician that is very much my own and coherent and develops and evolves and is a curated, so to say, representation of the things I find interesting. And to me, the collaborations are equally relevant, but they maybe exist slightly outside of this as an annex or as a learning point or as a reservoir of experiences that I may draw on for what I want to do purely on my own. And I think because of that, it's quite easy to let go, because somehow, even though they're very important, they don't feel like they are always fundamentally me, so to say. They are, as I said, somebody else or something else.
Yeah.
I think letting go is very important. And I also think what's important is not to think too far ahead about, you know, where are we going with this?
I think that's a really good point. I mean, it strikes me that the letting, why some people won't let go is because of something you just said, Sibram, which is because they want it to be a success. So they've already planned for something to be successful, and there's a tension there that I might not go there because I might fail, and therefore people might see that, and therefore they'll think less of me.
And it's a double failure, because then you haven't enjoyed the process. I mean,
precisely.
Why don't you just go in nice and open-minded? Even if what you come up with in the end isn't very good, you've enjoyed the process, hopefully. And I do believe also that if you enjoy the process, you might actually be more likely to deliver something which is worth.
To do it again, aren't you?
Yeah.
And deliver something worth.
But I think it's also important to realise that when you make something, you know, Kurt Vonnegut said this really well. I think you might have seen this letter or heard this story, but he once wrote this letter to a class saying, you know, write the best poem you can and make it rhyme, because when you have form and structure, you can judge how well you are obtaining or achieving the result that you aimed for. But then the moment you've done it, destroy the poem and throw it in 7 different bins, and you'll still have something because your soul will have grown a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is the important part, that your soul grows through these things. And it goes wrong when people feel that what they are making has to represent them before this growth process. When they say, I have to make something that is me now, you want to make something that is you in the future, because that helps you to develop yourself as a creative or interesting human being. And maybe you'll make something that you hate, but there is absolutely no reason why you can't just then throw it in the bin. And it goes wrong when people have too much desire to control the life of their output.
Yes. Okay.
I mean, I think connected to that is a lot of people, well, I don't know a lot of people, but there is a masterpiece mindset where if I don't create a masterpiece, what use is it?
What's the point?
Yeah, what's the point? Well, not everything is a masterpiece and not everything has to be a masterpiece.
Especially visually, but I think in visual culture, but I think we can extend this to our entire culture, because after all, most things we do are to a certain extent connected to the visual world. I think in the arts, for instance, we have moved away from making one perfect artwork to making a coherent exhibition. I think we are more and more living in the age of the curator rather than the age of the artist. You can see this with things like Instagram, which helps people to sort of curate their own possible visual identity, or Facebook, where people write statuses that together form a narrative. And I think with that mindset of being a curator of your own output, you can have lots of little pockets and little alleyways and dead ends that become interesting all of a sudden, much more so than when you are, like Richard says, trying to create that one masterpiece. And I think that the analogy of the curator, even though there's many things wrong with curators, and I could go on forever about all the things that are wrong with them, the sense of putting things together and seeing how they fit is a very worthwhile activity. And I think what's good and what you can learn from that mentality is that often the best results come from having several things that speak in different ways and trying to figure out in your head how they speak together. And that can be an album where you have five different songs in different styles that somehow create a coherent album, or it can be an arts exhibition where you have five different mediums that somehow all speak about the same type of thing, which is something I tend to be quite prone to. But it can also be your personal style wearing clothes that are somehow matched in a strange way that makes you feel good. Or it can be a political opinion, or it can be anything, as long as it is selected with care and an understanding of why you're doing these things and how they fit together.
Anything you do creatively, you self-curate.
That's exactly what I mean.
Yeah, right.
Your albums, you know, you're doing, if I may reveal this, you're doing an album which has guest stars.
It does, and that was...
That's curating.
It is. I mean, that came about because it was put to me that I should do that, and it seemed like an exciting challenge. So I thought of all the people I know who would maybe contribute something or be something which would be interesting for the project. And it's come to pass that everything that's come in and coming in has made me think in different ways, which is possibly what we're getting at here.
So that goes back to Simon's point about there being an element of growth. Something that comes from it is...
And surprise, and yeah. Mm-hmm.
If someone was sitting here and they wished to collaborate, but they hadn't done previously, they worked on their own an awful lot, but they were suddenly told, right, you're going to have to start collaborating, and it's all going to start tomorrow. What kind of things would you suggest might help them in that process? I mean, we talked about letting go. We talked about not having a long-term plan. But what other things would you say would help that process?
Maybe initially just see it as something they have to do. They've been told they have to do it, so they have to do it.
Okay, so...
Don't attach too much to it. Which it goes back to letting go.
Right, yeah, so non-attachment.
We're finding a common ground.
Okay.
So that at least you know where you are. And this can be something very simple, you know, by saying, for instance, okay, we're collaborating. Well, I know Richard doesn't particularly like jazz. So if Richard and I, for instance, were to collaborate, then what's the point in me forcing him into something? But maybe, at the same time, we do need to define something. You know, we could say, well, if we're not going to do a jazz album... But then maybe I might not be wanting to play the saxophone, but I will do something else. But, you know, you need to negotiate and find something that you can both agree on and then work from there. Maybe we will do an album which is about a thing. We just say, okay, we're going to do something about or with apples. And then you look at all the possibilities of an apple. And you bite the apple, that makes a noise. You can record it. Maybe you can loop it.
Yes.
You know, and then... apples get poked. You know, the sound of poking is nice and percussive, and maybe you get a whole album out of
the
an apple.
Maybe, though, I say to you, but I don't like loops, in which case we've got to do something else with an apple.
Yeah, you throw it at the wall, and you record that noise. There is, as long as you look at it that way, and you just keep playing, and you keep trying to be genuine, that's maybe the most important thing.
No, I think you're negotiating, you're setting some ground rules, you're being genuine, and what you're not doing is blocking, because if you've said, I don't like this, you've said, that's fine, let's do this. So you're just building on each other's ideas, aren't you?
But even if I turn around to you and say, but I don't like apples, I think we could maybe explore the fact that you like apples and I don't like apples.
I hate bananas, though.
Well, maybe that's what we need to do, I quite like bananas.
That could be the next album.
Yeah, no, you know, and then you can do the whole fruit series. I'm just going to come back to something I said earlier, which I think maybe I should underline a bit more, and that's sincerity. I think when you collaborate, it is also very easy to become cynical about it and say, oh, I'm just doing this because maybe for money or for, you know, I'm I mean it now and might as well, but I think it's important to try and remain sincere, whatever you do, whatever you make. And even when you're insincere, just be sincere about your insincerity. If you're going to be jaded and cynical and sardonic, then at least be honest about it and say, well, I don't care. So maybe, you know, if you say, I don't like apples, I hate apples, but I'm going to make an album about apples, you know, you're just going to shout, I hate apples in the microphone for 45 minutes. And then it's fine again.
Super rare enough. Thank you very much. Richard Youngs, thank you.
Pleasure.
Richard Youngs and Sibrin Renema. For more information about Richard, please go to nofansrecords.com. For information on Sibrin, go to sibrin-renema.com. Thanks for listening.